Okay, so we're doing Gedalf and Bet. We're finishing up, I think it's the second Mishnah from the Perek, and we had said that other holidays on which it's prohibited to engage in commerce with them was Yom Tiglas Zikno, which is when they get some sort of haircut. So the question is going to be is what exactly is this referring to? So we're on the two dots on Yudalf and Beth, three lines down from the top. Ibayiluhu Hechi Gitani. So the question was, what's the meaning of this statement in the Mishnah? Yom Tigalas Zikno, V'hanachas Bolariso, Odilma Yom Tigalas Zikno, V'havoris Bolariso. So we know that their way that they would work, some sort of the different idolatrous practices was, is they would get some sort of haircut and leave a long, like, ponytail, rat tail type of thing in their back, in the back of their head. So the question becomes, is a reference to the Mishnah here when they would get the initial haircut to allow the growth of the ponytail? You know, I'm actually reminding now, there are some priests, I think some Buddhist priests who get this type of haircut still, where they shave the entire head except for, like, a ponytail from the back. You guys ever seen that before? We could Google images of it later, but I'm pretty sure that's something like that. So is it that initial haircut, that is the day in which? Or, apparently, they would then also grow it out for a year, and then they would cut the ponytail in the back afterwards. So is that referring to the initial time they get the haircut, or when they finally cut off the ponytail in the back? So Tashma, so we have a brisa, the Tanya Tarayu. Actually, it's both. Yom Tikalas Zikno, Bahanachas Balariso, Yom Tikalas Zikno, Bahavaras Balariso. Now, it's the day in which they get the initial haircut to leave that big ponytail in the back. That's also going to be Usser. And so, too, when they remove it and offer it up. Now, again, we said that's on a more personal, individual basis, not on a societal, national basis. So now, the Gemara that tells us another interesting holiday, and I didn't get to check out the Maharal, but apparently Maharal has a very interesting take on this Gemara of one of the other Roman holidays. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. Oda Cheres Yishlahem Baromi. There was another pagan holiday that took place in the Roman Empire. Achas the Shimon Shah, but it happened once every 70 years. So what would they do every 70 years? Mivin Adam Shalem Umar Kivin Osoal Adam Chiger. They would take someone who was fit, and they would place them on top of the shoulders of someone who had a limp. Already, you can already begin to understand the metaphor of who's being alluded to here. Umabishon also big day Adam Harishon, and they would place on the person who was fit, the Shalem person, the clothing of Adam Harishon. Again, if this is a reference to Esav and Yaakov, so we know that Esav had inherited, according to Medrash, the clothing, whatever that means, of of Adam, who I think he had gotten it from Nimrod. I believe the Midrash says when he was coming back from the field. So the Midrash says, where was he coming from? So it says that's the day where he killed Nimrod and took his garment. Again, it's probably some sort of like garment that, if you think of like, I don't know, when I read this Gemara first, I'm like, oh, Greek mythology, where like Hades had this helmet of like fear, where like basically like it would like cause you to become like anxious and petrified. So too, apparently this like garment would like make all the animals afraid of Nimrod and help him with his hunt. So then they would also say, Duvin, Umanichon lo barosho karkab kiplo sharabi shmal. Okay, that's kind of gross. They would take, apparently, one of the 10 martyrs, the Sar Hurge Malchus, was Rabbi Shmuel. It was known that Rabbi Shmuel was very, very, very beautiful. And apparently when he was killed, the daughter, as Rashi explains, the daughter of the emperor at the time, basically fell in love with the looks of Rabbi Shmuel. And what did she do? How, in the cruelty that she had? They flayed his skin and made him like a mannequin out of his skin in order to still have his face, his image. And Rashi says, he quotes the Gemara here then, Vadaim Munach Beginzi Romi, that at that time, I guess he was quoting some sort of tradition, that this article of Rabbi Shmuel still exists in somewhere in the catacombs in Rome. So he put this on him, again, this beauty. Vitalule Bitsavre Matkal Resh Zuza de Pisa. They would go ahead and they would hang from his neck gold, these gold bracelets, these gold necklaces that had the weight of 200 zuz. And then they would cover all of the marketplaces with this onyx exterior. And what would they say? And they would call it the following statement. Sach kiri plastar achwa demarana zaifna. That the end of the, so Rashi says, Sach kiri plastar, the cheshbon, the calculation of the deceiver, which, who's that a reference to? It's a reference to Yaakov Avinu. As Rashi explains, Shakar Laban of Arachas Yam, Shesofi Gal Kazavhu. Right, that Yaakov had promised, right? He was the one who received the brachos from Yitzhak Avinu, and the promise was that we would be redeemed and we would be victorious. And yet, That's a lie. He's a deceiver, because right now who's victorious? The Roman Empire. So Achva de Marana Zaifna, he is the brother of our master Esav, the forger. Now the question is, the Gemara is going to show in a second, who's Zaifna referring to? Because if you read it the way it's written, it sounds like it's talking about Esav. That Esav is the one who's the forger. He's the one who's doing these things. That would be weird they'd be saying about that. But as Rashi explains, what they were trying to say is Yaakov Sharim le Esav v'chashav itov bracha yos gavir lechav. So how is he a forger? Because he tried to deceive, again, Yitzhak, to steal the brachos from Esav. So then the Gemara then says, this is what would happen once every 70 years. The Gemara says, "Dachami chami, dlo chami lo chami." If you saw it, you saw it. If you didn't see it, you weren't going to see it, because it only happened once every 70 years. So the Gemara says, they would still, more they continue saying, "Mayahani the Rama, Bramuse, the Zaifna, Zaifnuse." You know, what use is there to one who deceives? What is use is there to one who forges? Umesaimi, but they would end above with the following: "Hachi voy ladin kad yakom din." You know, woe is to us on the day of judgment, when the person, in this right, that we're referencing Yaakov, will be vindicated through judgment. So again, a very strange spectacle that would happen in Rome every 70 years. Do we actually have any historical evidence for this? No. We look at Steinsaltz. He gives some sort of like vaguely, superficially similar thing, but it's not similar at all. So I don't know. Again, it's more of an indicator of Chazal's attitudes towards Esav and Rome and Edom, and more so than a historical event. So Gemara continues. Amar Vashi, Rashi says, Hachshilim piyam rishayim. The downfall of our enemies, of the wicked, are in their mouths. How so? I amru zaifna achva de marana. If you had said the forger is the brother of our master, so what would that mean? Kedka amri. Sorry, it would mean that Yaakov is a forger, the brother of our master Esav. So the way that they phrased it, the way that the sort of the rhetoric they would use is our master is, it sounds like he's the forger. Marana gufi zaifnahu. It sounds like Esav himself, they're saying, is the forger. And so therefore the downfall, says Ravashi, the downfall of Rishayim is themselves. They're articulating it themselves. So the Gemara then says, wait a second, if this is one of the holidays, so how come our Mishnah didn't mention this holiday? We don't have a name for it, it happens once every 70 years. How come our Mishnah didn't mention it? So the Gemara says, "Tana didan, my time lo kachashiv la. Lahai di isa b'chol shasa, v'shasa kachashiv, the lisa b'chol shasa, v'shasa lo kachashiv." The Gemara's answer is very simple, is that our Mishnah is giving you the typical yearly, you know, cycle of the year. We're talking about the yearly events, not these events that happen once every 70 years. So the Gemara says, "Hani de Romai." Fine. So those are the Roman holidays. But guess what? Where are we living right now? We're living in Persia. So what about the Persian, Zoroastrian, Sicilian holidays? So Gemara says, "Uparsai mai." What are they? Mutardi, Toriski, Moharki, Umoharin. Okay. I have no idea what those are referring to. Maybe we can ask one of the professors here who's an expert in Zoroastrianism. "Hani de Parsai, de Romai." Fine. Okay. So that's the Persians and the Roman holidays. "Ubavlai." Okay. But what about the Babylonian ones? "Mai muharki akinite bechenveni v'eser." But there's some sort of like thing that took place in the marketplace. "V'eser ba'adar," an attempt of Adar. I don't know, again, there's a reference here, Rashi doesn't tell us, Tosas doesn't tell us, I don't know what these are references to, but, you know, Adar, it's still an Adar, great, okay, I'm not sure what exactly is being referenced here. "Am Rav Chanan bar Rav Chizda, Amar Rav, V'amilah," some say it was Rav Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav. So now we have, here we're talking about, you know, different events that happen on a yearly basis, different events that happen for personal reasons. Now we're going to have, there are five places that are sort of pilgrimage sites. Yeah. You kind of think like the Oracle of Delphi or Mecca and Medina, where people, or you know, Lahavdil, Harabayas, where the issue is going to be all year round, because the entire place is like the pilgrimage site for Avodah Zarah. So Gemara says, "Chamisha batei avodas kochavim kavuinhein." There are five established, you know, five pagan pilgrimage sites. Elohim, these are the following. Beit Baal Bivavel. Beit Baal in Bavel. Again, I'm not sure what these places are. Beit Navo Bikorsi. In Korsi. Tarata Shebe Mapag. Tzrefa Shebe Ashkelon. In Nishra Shebe Arabia. So we're going to come back to that in a second. We're talking about it now. Because Nishra Be Arabia, so it sounds like it's this place Nishra, which is in Arabia, which is in that area of the world. So the question becomes is, well, what's the reference here? Is this a reference to Islam? Well, seemingly it depends, of course, like historically when the Gemara was actually finished to be edited, right? Because if it was actually according to the traditional accounting, it was edited it was edited, it's finished, right? So Ravina Ravashi Sofarah says around what's around like the 5th or 6th century. So of course this Gemara can't be referencing Islam because Muhammad only came around in the 7th century. That's when the sword of Islam began to cover that entire part of the world. And of course everyone agrees, everyone admits, even like the greatest Islamic theologians would admit that the ancestors of beforehand were pagans, right? The whole thing of the Kaaba, which is in Mecca, that whole like big black stone that everyone looks at. So I'm pretty sure that historically it was a site of idolatrous practice. And then Muhammad came and transferred and made it like, you know, Kor's Klape Shmaya. So it wouldn't be a problem for us at all. It'd be like, oh, look, it's Arabia and Arabs and Muslims and like it's bizarre, because it could just be referring to the pagan rites that took place by the, you know, ethnic ancestors of current Muslims today. If you think it's much later, so maybe it's like an indication. So that's where it becomes this conversation of what's the status of Islam today. So we're talking about this before we started recording, but you would think, well, let's see, Christianity, you know, especially Catholicism is the whole thing with the Trinity, it's not so pashut, okay, you know, maybe it's not Avodah Zarah for them, as we saw in the first Amud, because Shittuf isn't necessarily a problem for B'nai Noach, but it's a problem for us. What about Islam? So the Rambam says, black on white, both the Mishnah Torah and his Shas and Shivos, that 100% Islam is not Avodah Zarah.
He lived under Islam.
So of course, it's always the question from like for like medieval Jewish historians of like, you know, how well do the Rishonim who are now living, right, in those places, how well do they know the other religions? So for example, you know, the Rambam has it's not so clear. He has a softer take on Christianity than most Rishonim. And so many want to say, oh, it's because he lived in Muslim Spain and Muslim Egypt and not in, he didn't really know Christians at all. Could be.
Right, but for Islam, he can be trusted.
Probably. Right, he knows what's going on. So the problem then becomes, so then it's interesting of who takes the other side. So the other side is the Ran. The Ran is Rabbeinu Nissim, so he's living in northern Spain, northeastern Spain, under the Christians, but still there's Muslim influence there. Right, they're meaning it's a whole part of the Reconquista you probably learned about when you were in high school, of how the Muslims took over, you know, from North Africa, came over and took over Spain, and then slowly but surely the Christians pushed them back, and finally, I mean, fortunately for them, unfortunately for us, it resulted in the unification of the kingdom in the 1400s with Ferdinand and Isabella, which resulted in, you know, a couple decades later in the expulsion of Jews from Spain. So it's not so, but he says that. He thinks that Islam is Avodah Zarah. He gives a whole argument there. It's the Ran in Sanhedrin. It's also Ritva in later on Avodah Zarah. And so the question is, are we choshesh for the psak of Ritva? So as I mentioned before, Eliezer Waldenberg, it's Eliezer, is probably the only, very few, but he's one of the only major poskim who actually like says you should be choshesh for this, and therefore it should be usher to enter into a mosque as it is to enter into a church. However, Rav Avadia, Svarti Posek, who, again, as you were saying before, like has an encounter with Muslims living in Egypt and then moving to Israel, but also really Yashiv, Ashkenazic, and doesn't have experience, and many others, Yitzhak Khan Inspector, and a few others, all take on this question and say, yeah, it's mutter because he passed like the Rambam and the Rove of Rishonim who don't view Islam as a bizarre. Now, obviously, the question that would then become, what about for us, right? Meaning, the question of Yarg Val Yavor, right? I mean, so for sure, everyone would agree, at least maybe a small exception of maybe one pshat in the Rambam, is that if you're forced to be converted, it's better to be Yaharik Val Yavor and not convert to Christianity. The question would become, okay, fine, so tell me it's not Avodah Zarah. It's for sure not Avodah Zarah for non-Jews. The question is it a problem? Is there Yag Val Yavor for a Jew or not? So you may know like the whole discussion about with some of the letters, Iger HaTiman, like, that they send, that the Yemenite community sends the Rambam. In fact, that's why, part of those letters, is why the Yemenite community adopted the Rambam as their posek today. So if you're Yemenite, basically, you want to know what the psak is, it's always in Mishnah Torah, to the point where the Rambam, and it gets just interesting aside, is that the Rambam is the most makel when it comes to Ein Bishel Acher Bishel. So he applies it to halacha, even to liquids. That's why Yemenites will heat up their stews on Shabbos, because Ein Bishel Acher Bishel. Now, Ashkenazim and Sephardim, other Sephardim, non-Yemenites are more machmir. It goes like Yemenites are the most mekel, then Ashkenazim, then other sardim. So Agira Teiman is where the Rambam really deals with this question of, you know, forcible conversions and Islam and like whether, but this is a big question. So that's a little more of a complicated issue, but we'd say majority, again, the consensus amongst poskim is that Islam is not avodah zarah for sure for non-Jews, and therefore it's not a house of avodah zarah. Question of Yarek v'Yavor, we'll leave it for a different time. So then the Gemara then continues, so now we're back in the Gemara. So it says, Ka'asa Rav Dimi, Hosif Olein. So Rav Dimi, when he came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, listen, there's actually a couple more centers of paganistic worship, and they are Yerid Shebe Ayin Bechi. So the marketplace, which is in Ein Bechi, Nidbaka Shebako, and Nidbaka, which is in Akko. Ikadamri, even another tradition, Nitbara Shebako. What's it? Nidbaka was Nitbara. Again, of course, you always wonder when you do these things, like, what's the point? The point is that this is an oral tradition. They're trying to get it as precise as possible. Rav Dimi min Harda. So now we have a different tradition. It wasn't Rav Dimi from Eretz Yisrael. Apparently, it was Rav Dimi from Harda. He said, Masti Ibcha, he said the opposite. Yerid Sheba'ako and Nidbecha Sheba'im Bechi. Okay. So now, Amrli Rav Hanan bar Rav Chizda Rav Chizda. So now, Rav Hanan, son of Rav Chizda, so it can't be he's talking to his father, because his father, he's talking to his grandson who was named after his father. So he says to his, or yeah, he says to his son or his grandson, my kavunin. What does it mean to be keva? As we said before, the Mishnah told us there are five places which are koveya for paganism. So Amar le, hachi Amar avud imcha. So I'll tell you what your mother's father said. Kavunin leolam tadira kula shasa pachilu. Right, what is it? It's a pilgrimage site. It's every single day of the year. They're always worshiping there. You know, again, the Oracle of Delphi, Mecca, v'chule, v'chule. So now we have we're going to end up we finish at the Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Amar Shmuel begola eno aser ella yom edam bilvad." We've seen this earlier on Zion and Beis that all this conversation of 3 days before and 3 days after. That's Rabbi Shmuel, but at least 3 days before, was only in Eretz Yisrael. Shmuel had said, and here it seems like the Gemara is giving us as a psak, that it comes in the diaspora, the day itself of the holiday is prohibited. Now the question would be, why? So we had seen one svara that I think Rashi said on Zayim Abed, which is that the paganistic practices of those who are in the diaspora aren't from a sense of full belief. Rather, it's like, this is what we do. It's kind of like, you know, Italians. Like, how much Italians are they super Catholic? Or it's like, yo, I'm Italian, so therefore I have to be Catholic. It's like, how are they? Do they believe in the Trinity? Do they believe in the Holy See? I don't know. It's a good question. It's funny that he says this because when we were in Chicago, so I met up with Rabbi Yonah Reese, who's the Av Beis Din of the CRC in Chicago. And he's a former dean of REITs at NYU. So I said, like, you know, I've been thinking a lot about Hinduism and Buddhism, about whether the really, truly, or at least Hinduism is really avodah zarah. I said, because there's a lot of discussion about who do you ask to determine the theology of religion? Do you ask the hamonam? Do you ask, like, you know, the common people? Do you ask, like, the quote-unquote, the rabbanim? Or do you ask, like, the gedolei hador of the religion to determine what actually do they believe? Because part of the issue was when Rav Eliashiv, several years ago, made his psak, that the I don't know if you guys heard about the Shetel controversy. I mean, none of us wear Shetel, so it makes sense. But basically what happened is that many of the wigs, the hair for the wigs that were coming from India. And what would happen, very similar to our daf, is that these women would grow out their hair for a number of years, and then they would cut it off and offer it up as a sacrifice. Not burn it, but like as an offer it up, and then that hair would then be sold to hair companies and make wigs out of it. So the question is, if it's takrovas of Rizara, it's like halacha l'maisa, right? If it's takrovas of Rizara, then it's asur b'hana. So Rav Eliashiv sent one of his shamashim to India, and they went to the temple. And so they asked the common chavra, like, oh, what are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish? And they said, oh, I'm giving my hair to, Ganesh or Vishnu or whatever, Krishna. And he's like, oh, avodah zarah. And so therefore the whole psak came out of like, therefore you can't get any shetels anymore, you have to burn them, it's a whole crazy thing. So I said, I asked Rabbi Reese, like, is that really true? Because like, if you ask like the actual like gedolim, like the leading theologians of Hinduism, it's much more shifting towards monotheism. Much more taking this perspective of like how there really is this belief in the unifying entity and principle of all reality. And these deities, so to speak, are just what they call avatars. They're expressions and manifestations of this one substance. So maybe it might be avodah zarah for us as Jews to adopt Hinduism, but maybe it wouldn't be a problem like Shittuf isn't a problem for Christianity. So he wanted to say that according to that Gemara in Zayim Abed, the fact that we the reason why we give the heter to engage with pagans outside of Eretz Yisrael is because it's really minhag ha'avos, and it's not really their true belief. He said maybe that's an indicator that we assess based on what the common people think, not based on theologians. But again, I don't think it's a locked and solid issue, but that was just, it reminded me as we said. Okay, fine. So just to finish up to the Mishnah, he says, the Gemara says, El Yom Edom. So it sounds like the day itself is a problem. Yom Edom, Nami Mi Aser. Is it really true that Yom Edom is Aser? The Gemara says, V'harav Yehuda, Sharalei, the Rav Bruni Lizvuni Chamra, the Rav Gidda Lizvuni Chitin. So we have these examples of Rav Yehuda in Bavel. He permitted Rav to sell, or Rav Brona, I guess it is, Rav Brona, yeah, Rav Kahana, to sell wine to pagans on their holiday in Bavel, and to Rav Gidol to sell wheat. So what's going on here? So it sounds like not only is the day itself, we said before, the 3 days isn't an issue outside of Yisrael, but even the day itself isn't a problem. So where it says no, Chagasa de Taye, we're talking about a festival of the merchants. Why? Shani Chagasa de Taye, the lo kfiya. Is it because it's not kavua, therefore, apparently, the lack of kfiut was a reason to be even more lenient outside of Eretz Yisrael. So we'll stop for today, but again, seeing some interesting topics come up of Zara and Islam and Mast, but also very practically, how do we conceive what the Zara is today? All right.